We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
If you attended any of the more recent Chicago City Council meetings or council committee hearings, it's been apparent that community activism is alive and well in the city. Whether the issue is a police and fire training academy on Chicago's West Side, the warehouse distribution center a company called Hillco wants to build in Little Village, or the $6 billion plan for the Lincoln Yards development on the North Side, crowds of people have come out to express opposition and, in many cases, support. And it's clear that people are doing more than just raising the decibel levels at City Hall. This weekend, we're going to talk about what they are doing and what they will do. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. We're talking about community activism this week with three among many people who are on the front lines these days. First, we have Amisha Patel, executive director of the Grassroots Collaborative. That's an alliance of several community, service, and labor groups pushing for change in Chicago. Next is Hu Nguyen, a board member of the Parents and Education Activist Group Raise Your Hand Action. And we're also joined by Debbie Southorn, one of the adults working with the mostly young activists in the No Cop Academy movement. They were fighting plans for that $95 million plus public safety training academy that won city council approval this past week. And thanks to all of you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So first, let me ask perhaps a dumb question, and that is, are we really seeing more activism these days, or are we in the media just paying more attention to it? Amisha?
I think that the activism has been going on for decades and decades, and there's a strong legacy, especially in Chicago, of organizing, of people coming together to try to fight for the change that they want to see. So, but I do think in recent period of time, the organizing has definitely become more vocal and more focused. And as we've been more focused, we've also been really clear about showing the connections between what we're focused on. And that is a really exciting development. So we have young Black people who have been fighting to stop this cop academy. We have Latinx community members organizing to stop this environmental degradation in their communities that Hillco will bring. And then we have a group of multiracial folks fighting Lincoln Yards and the fact that we're about to hand over $1 billion in tax subsidies to this very wealthy developer. And I think those connections, though not new, I think we have an exciting moment of people coming together.
It seems that people are seeing those connections in what might at first seem to be unconnected things. And it seems that you're bringing groups together. For example, on the day when the city council was considering Lincoln Yards and the police and fire academy, when you and other people spoke, that was a joint news conference with, you know, both of those things as the subject. What is getting people to see those connections and keeping them together?
Well, yes, and I'll just echo what Amisha said, that I think we are starting to really organize between the silos. So for example, we got involved, Raise Your Hand was involved, through the calling, right, the invitation through Civil, which was the Chicago Independent Venues League, who were first starting to push back on the Lincoln Yards. As a result, we partnered with North Side Housing. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's okay. And also,
are we gonna,
One North.
One North, absolutely. So we're seeing across
Brighton Park,
the public sectors, right? So this issue really affects housing. It affects education. It affects the public parks. So all of these, you know, the tax dollars that are going to this mega development for luxury homes, we're starting to see those connections and how they affect the entire city, not just one sector.
And what is bringing young people out, Debbie? I don't want to even imply that you're not young, because you're pretty young too. But I mean, we had people in their teens and you know, at best early 20s, really energized about the police academy and by extension, these other issues.
Yeah. So it's funny, I'm 29. And so I like to say that I'm one of the adult allies working this campaign. And I get laughed at for that a lot, as though I'm not a young person. But we're talking about, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds that have been fighting and working on this issue for the last 18 months, actually, right after the announcement was made around the police academy. And I think what has been the biggest motivator, right, is actually something that I appreciate about how the Sun-Times started reporting on it, is it's a symbol of ROM's misplaced priorities, right? And young people are tired of having their schools closed. They are tired of not having good jobs, right? They can, if they want to work for One Summer Chicago, you get $8 an hour, and it's only for 20 hours a week during the summer, right? Young people deserve a living wage also, not just once you turn 18. And so I think this campaign has spoken to all of these issues, right? It's not just about this building. It's about how are we investing in young people? How are we investing in Black communities? How are we investing in the West Side? And this building has really become sort of a symbol of what we're doing wrong. We put $4 million a day into the Chicago Police Department, and now they're going to get another facility on top of that when they continue to harass and lock up Black and brown young people and kill with impunity in ways that just feel like the city constantly is ignoring young people's voices. And so this campaign has been sort of a megaphone, right, for young folks who I think, you know, one of our youth leaders, actually, Destiny Harris, she opened at a Bernie Sanders rally, right, spoke to an audience of 12,000. And she wrote her speech for it. And I was blown away because she talked about how she, you know, her elementary school was closed, right? And then the middle school that her friends went to was also closed, right? And then she's had to grow up with these policies that we like to sort of, as adults, we remember how horrible it was when 50 schools were closed in 2013. But imagine being in middle school and seeing this institution in your neighborhood boarded up, closed, and now empty, right? And so she's been an incredible leader, an incredible voice saying, like, we young people deserve this investment, right? Let's invest in young people first. And so I think that's why we've seen so many youth come out. And then 20-somethings who are like, we're in solidarity with the younger young people, right? And it's been really beautiful.
But a lot of what brings people out would be outrage at things, whether it's the environmental problems in little villages is one example. But is, and from this point on, this is like a jump ball. Anybody can go for it because we've established who you all are and your voices. So I don't have to necessarily point at you. But anyway, but is outrage enough to sustain the activism? Does that keep it going, or what would?
I think that's it's a great question. And, you know, I think more and more we are really trying to center the emotion of love. And so much of there is outrage, of course, at injustice, but there's also love for community and love for people that is really driving this organizing and this movement, and is very much something that is what will sustain this work over the long haul. But it is both. There are many emotions involved in people's lives, both in terms of what's happening to them, but also our vision and our belief of what's possible. And I think that vision and that sense of power and hope is really critical, because I like to say if I have friends who are organizers who feel burnt out, burnout to me is when you don't feel hope anymore, when you are, it is a level of discouragement that nothing can change. And our work as organizers, and I think the work of leaders across the city, is to continue to organize the hope and organize the sense of what's possible. And I think you see that a lot in each of these campaigns as well. So though there is, you know, I was really struck by, yesterday at city council, or on Wednesday at the city council meeting, there were hundreds of people who were not allowed into city council, though there were, you know, rows and rows of empty seats inside council chambers. But what young people in particular did with that moment and that energy was dance and chant and bring like the sense of, again, naming what their vision is, but through with like living that joy in their whole body. And that to me is like that. We have so much to learn as older folks around what actually is sustainable in this work. And that power and that energy is beautiful, and I think is what's going to carry us through.
And What does it for either younger people, parents? I mean, like I said, for the years that I've been in Chicago, and it's only been, you know, a few decades, it still seems to me that we are seeing something happening these days that is more energetic, more long term than I think we've seen before. Obviously not going back to the civil rights days, but still, for what's going on in the city, what keeps parents going? What keeps, you know, young people still engaged?
I mean, I think, excuse me. So I think one of the things that comes to mind, right, is that the No Cop Academy campaign has in many ways been a part of, you know, the movement for Black lives that we've seen sort of ripple the country, but especially here in Chicago, right? Hundreds and thousands of young Black people and allies really have shaken up the political system quite literally over the last 5 years, right? We saw after the video of Laquan's killing, you know, Anita Alvarez was ousted by the organizing of young Black women. We saw reparations won for torture survivors, police torture survivors under Commander John Burge. And in many ways, I think No Cop Academy in particular is a continuation of that legacy, in part because Rahm Emanuel is trying to say that this facility is somehow justice for Laquan. When you tell that to young people, it's like a stab and it's a dagger in the heart to say that justice for Laquan is a building where police can get more training, as opposed to what are all the things and that could have been in place so that we didn't fail Laquan in the first place, right? He was in foster homes. He was kicked out of school. He again and again was failed by the city systems. And so it's about propelling and carrying forward the momentum that has been built over the last few years and continuing to demand a different vision. And this time it's been a sort of a crew of newer, younger leaders who saw a lot of what's been happening and have been looking for and are just hungry for ways to plug in and have been able to access that through these campaigns, right? And I think that's been at least a piece of why we're continuing to see such robust youth organizing in the city, frankly.
Yeah. Who?
Absolutely. I'll just add that I think certainly I'm a parent in a CPS school at Goethe, and I feel like organizations like Logan Square Neighborhood Association, who are really growing the parent mentor programs, are doing a really great job of really, in addition to bringing in this idea of like not becoming, you know, burning out with compassion, right? We do have this idea of compassion fatigue, but of really being able to harness and unpack, like have really authentic conversations around unpacking privilege. And I think certainly for me and the parents that I think that I work with and in community with, particularly in families, because I come from a biracial family, or my kids are Vietnamese and white Brazilian, I think we're having these conversations as we're communing, right? That we have to really authentically unpack the power dynamics, the white privilege, and how our communities can really show up in solidarity, be real, you know, true allies in these situations. For example, you know, raise your hand and raise your hand action. Our members are primarily, you know, white, middle class, upper middle class parents from the North Side. And when we started in 2010, it was as a result of, you know, just the disinvestment in schools. But obviously they weren't seeing the disinvestment in their schools. They were, but the impacts weren't as great as it was happening in the Black and Brown communities. And so for these parents to come together to start reimagining what it would look like if we were really, truly equitably distributing our resources, that doesn't mean their schools need more resources because they're able to have those resources met. It means we really needed to get to the table and talk about and strategize around how can we really redistribute the resources from the district to these other communities and in a way that is not, for lack of a better phrase, you know, this white savior complex. And so I think that is, for me, it feels like this authentic building across neighborhoods, across class. Divide. So.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. We're talking about community activism in Chicago, and my guests are Amisha Patel, director of the Grassroots Collaborative, Who Win with Raise Your Hand Action, and Debbie Southorn with No Cop Academy. So let's talk about, this isn't where the fatigue comes in, but maybe some disappointment. What happens when things don't go your way? And I'm not just asking what a group called No Cop Academy does when it's apparent that there will be one, but also, let's face it, all three of the things I mentioned moved forward. They got the zoning for the for Lincoln Yards. That still has to go through the big fight, which is all over the taxpayer financing for it. But let's be honest, we know where that fight is going to go. And also, you know, we were talking about the Little Village. What happens to the energy, the activism, when the thing that was organized, you were organized about, goes down, or, you know, when it wins? Amisha?
I think what we've seen over the years is that what we at Grassroots Collaborative organize for and what our demands for are often so big and in some ways feeling very unlikely to win, that we know that this organizing is for the long haul and that it is not going to be an instant quick victory, but rather that we are building wins through each of these fights. So even as we might have ultimately lost the demand, we understand that we're building power and what our successes are towards that fight. And I think what we've seen over the years is that we've forced the administration to have to actually shift. So for example, in 2011, when Rahm Emanuel first came into office, the collaborative started organizing immediately around TIFs. And one of the things we organized for was a TIF surplus ordinance, which would say that, you know, if TIF funds aren't actually used, they shouldn't stay as a slush fund, you know, ready for whatever the next, you know, whatever you want to use out of it, but rather should be returned back to the taxing bodies, to the schools, the parks, the libraries, where those dollars are being diverted from. And though we didn't actually, our ordinance got buried, as often our ordinances do in City Council and the Rules Committee, which is where all good things go to die. But what
glad
happens?
You said that, but I would have said it if you didn't.
Yes,
it is, in fact,
I mean,
what happens.
We did an action with graves, with tombstones, actually, on Michelle Harris once. So, but what we did see was that Rahm Emanuel then did an executive order basically on what we were calling for, right? So, he doesn't want us to give us the win. He wants to claim the idea as his. But that shows that the idea of what we wanted, there's power behind it, and we were able to actually shift it over after several years of organizing. So, of course, we knew, our communities knew that taking on, you know, $1.3 billion tax giveaway to a huge developer, and we're sitting in the building of this developer as we speak, Sterling Bay, you know, was going to be very difficult, if not nearly impossible. But it for us, it's about, we know that we have to, that there are so many wins in taking on the fight. And there's so much, you actually see, you know, it's kind of sad that in Chicago, a win for us is a divided roll call in City Council. But the fact that there are, you know, 6, 8, 10 aldermen who vote against these things are actually really deeply significant.
That was one of the most divided news roll calls that we've seen in a while.
Yes.
Which says a lot more about the City Council than it does anything else. But
I think it shows that we are succeeding in pushing forward actually our ideas and forcing a real debate and conversation with an administration and a previous one before him and Mayor Daley that has been used to never having to have any conversation or argument at all.
And I know that Alderman, why am I blanking on his name? Who?
Rosa.
Huh? No, for the Lincoln Yards development.
Hopkins.
Hopkins, yes, Brian Hopkins. I'm getting old. Brian Hopkins isn't going to win too many fans in this room, I don't think. However, he said something. He basically said, you know, the opposition made Lincoln Yards better. And clearly it did, because there's more housing in there. May not be enough, but there's more housing on site.
More affordable housing.
But there's more housing on site. There's more parkland than there would have been if Sterling Bay, or excuse me, if Sterling Bay had had its original way. So some changes were made, and they promised that, well, we're not necessarily, the mayor promised that they're not done yet. Does that feel like a win?
I mean, it's funny. I'll jump in here because I think also with the police academy, they also added restaurants to the site. Right. To us, the win in that isn't that like, oh, now there's an additional thing. The win is they are feeling so much pressure for how unwanted this is that they have to make these concessions and these changes in order to at least save their own face. Right. We're not going to say, oh, because Peaches and Culver's are now going to be on the site of the police academy. Yes, that means it's real economic development. No, but the win is seeing an administration that is typically ruling with an iron hand, fumbling to save face on projects that should have just been a sure thing, that should have just passed right through and not, you know, rubber stamped. They should not have been split votes. That's what's a significant thing, I think.
And does it feel as if maybe the groups, maybe the people who were speaking out will have, if not the ear of the people who are moving forward, allowed a seat at the table to, I mean, does it feel like that can happen, or is it just that you've been tossed a few scraps?
I'm not expecting Mayor Emanuel to give me a call anytime soon or to give a call to any of us.
He's not going to be calling many people in the next couple of months.
He's still trying to do a tremendous amount before he leaves, yes. Right? And that is part of the whole challenge here is that it's very clear that he's trying to push forward his legacy projects before he goes because he knows the next administration is not necessarily in favor. And there's actually several times in several of our cases have come out against, you know, these bills moving forward. So, so I do think that there is, you know, for us, it's about, we know that the things that we're asking for or fighting for and organizing for aren't things that will easily be won. And we're clear about that. And part of it is that our visions are very bold. Many people from the outside will say, well, you're just never going to win that. And I think it is, again, this idea of like, we know that unless we imagine it and call for it, we will never get there. And so I think we're clear that our organizing is over the long haul. And we're looking out at like, you know, really generations ahead and what we can do to move forward, that these aren't incremental changes we're fighting for.
Debbie.
Yeah. And I think to the average person, right, the only time we hear about these things is protests at City Hall, right?
Right.
But we didn't just magically have 400 people show up yesterday because suddenly it's a bad thing, right? We're talking about over the last 18 months, literally hundreds of young people have been trained in how to canvass and door knock. They've been trained in how to meet with their aldermen and have met with their aldermen, right? They've done workshops and presentations for their peers and for other adults. Like we see the win, right, in how much more prepared and more ready we are for the next fight, as actually far more important than whether we got 6 or 8 votes in city council against this. And I think the fact also that we are telling these stories is connected. You asked earlier about how did we start to make some of those connections? And in part, it was because of the corruption scandals hitting City Hall. We just started digging. And these aren't just connected in theory, right? Ed Burke, his firm were the attorneys for Sterling Bay when they sold the Lincoln Yards Fleet and Facilities Management site to the city, which is how they got the money for the Cop Academy, right? Like, that's a material connection, not to mention, right, when we first started talking about those connections with young people, even before we said the Ed Burke pieces or the pay-to-play pieces, we just painted the picture of what's happening at Lincoln Yards. And we were like, do you see any connections? And they're like, yeah, this is a misuse of TIFs. Community members don't want it. And this is about city council trying to rush something through, exactly like's been happening with our project, right? So being able to tell those stories together and see our fights as connected is incredible. Like, that Raise Your Hand had parent activists willing to take a rest with young Black teenagers on Tuesday after the budget committee vote was this beautiful moment of intergenerational multiracial solidarity that is how we're going to be able to actually continue this fight for the long haul and reimagine Chicago.
And who I'm going to toss this one to you first, but you guys have raised a really important issue here. What do you do when the people or persons, the person in power, in this case, there will be an African-American woman mayor in, you know, in on the fifth floor at City Hall, who in at least one case completely supported what you were doing. I mean, in the case of the police guy, and frankly, also on the Lincoln Yards, we're saying slow this down. I think most aldermen will say the project's got to go eventually, but still slowing it down so people can have a say. They were with you there. What happens when you get people who purport to be on your side in City Hall? What do you do? What do you do then? I mean, how do you approach these people? I mean, are you is it a strong approach? Are you holding their feet to the fire? Are you what do you do?
Absolutely, we continue to organize in the same manner, right? That we are organizing around accountability. So whether you said yes to a particular, for example, we'll take just for example a few aldermen who had put out a public statement around Lincoln Yards a couple months ago saying they would vote no. In fact, yesterday they flipped to yes. So then we go back to the drawing board. We connect with their constituents and we have them call and set up a meeting and to talk about it further. So just because we think we're going to have, you know, someone in the position of power that is going to work more or are more aligned to our values and principles doesn't mean we're going to ease up on them.
Amisha, what are the coming challenges? I mean, we've been talking about some very specific projects. What's next on the list? We only have a couple of minutes left, but let's talk about where we're going to hear voices raised or at least asking for things again.
Well, we know, I mean, you know, Lincoln Yards is just, you know, kind of one mega development project. We know that there are going to be future mega development projects. There's some already in the works, like the Midwest TIF. And so that kind of battleground around public dollars and where they should be used for and who would actually develop without those public dollars and this idea that we have to throw all of literally billions of dollars to whether it's Lincoln Yards and Sterling Bay or it's Amazon or it's, you know, whoever is the next one, Google, who know, you know, we know there's a line of out of kind of corporate players who are coming in because that is the setup. We're all set up to like, you know, to kind of fight against each other for these dollars. But I think that's going to continue to be a battleground in terms of where those public dollars go. I also think that, I mean, criminalization of young Black people is not going to end no matter who is the next mayor of the city. And that organizing is going to continue and it's going to get, you know, bigger and stronger because that is what is necessary. So I think that, I mean, those are just two examples of the kinds of fights that will continue. We know that, I mean, for me, what's at stake here is again, the city of Chicago. What's it going to look like? Who's it going to be for? Who's going to be allowed to actually afford to live here and be able to make this place their home?
That is going to be the final word. And thank you for a discussion that went very quickly. So we'll have to have you guys back sometime when we're talking about what's happened with the new administration. I would like to thank Amisha Patel, director of the Grassroots Collaborative, Who Win with Raise Your Hand Action, and Debbie Southorn with No Cop Academy for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you'd like to have a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.